Good morning, and I'm going to call the Tax Committee to order, and we're going to start with Representative Lanning here this morning. We don't have a quorum yet. We'll formally move Representative Lanning's bill when we have that. And then we have Representative Kalin after that, who has also a Border City bill. But Representative Lanning is going to, who has been on this committee, one of the spokespersons for Border Cities, is going to present House File 130 this morning. So welcome, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Well, when we do have a quorum, I will move House File 130. This House file reauthorizes a $1.5 million appropriation for Border City Enterprise and Development Zones for the cities of East Grand Forks, Dilworth, Wortonville, Breckenridge, and Moorhead, all cities that are contiguous to the state of North Dakota and South Dakota. Accordingly, this bill is co-authored by Representatives Marquardt, Leader, and Aaron Peterson. The purpose of this bill is to enable our communities to remain competitive in retaining and attracting businesses and jobs. North Dakota continues, and South Dakota, continue to be very stiff competition as we try to retain our businesses and attract new businesses. Let me first give some background about this legislation. I was a member of the Moorhead City Council back in the 1970s, became mayor in 1980, and during that period of late 70s and early 80s, we were facing enormous challenges as a border community. We were losing people. In fact, we estimated that we probably lost 15% of our population during that time frame. We were going downhill. We had to close 7 of our schools. Our school enrollment went from over 7,000 to just over 4,000 in the span of a few years. At one point, we had 500,000 square feet of vacant commercial industrial property. And for a city the size of Moorhead, around 30,000, that's a lot of commercial industrial property that sat vacant. Well, in 1983, we asked the state of Minnesota to provide some targeted relief to enable us to be more competitive in being able to retain and attract businesses to our communities along the border. And since that time, this targeted relief has really been working. The bleeding has stopped. We are more competitive. In fact, our communities are seeing some modest growth, still in comparison to the border cities in North Dakota. We're well behind, as you'll see in some of the information we pass out. To further explain the current situation and build the case for reauthorization, I have with me two city officials, Lori Winterfeld Shanks, a member of the Moorhead City Council, Mayor Pro Tem, and Mayor Cliff Barth from the city of Breckenridge. And Ms. Winterfeld Shanks will go first.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lori Winterfeld Shanks. I'm the Mayor Pro Tem of Moorhead, and I bring apologies today for Mayor Mark Botson, who I know would like to be here but is traveling out of the country right now. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you and testify on behalf of House File 130, the Border City Enterprise Zone and Border City Development Zone Program. The City of Moorhead, as Representative Lanning mentioned, the City of Moorhead, along with the cities of Breckenridge, Dilworth, East Grand Forks, and Ortonville, appreciate the continued support of the $1.5 million per biennium program from the legislature this year. As many of you know, and as Representative Lanning pointed out, it was developed in 1983 in response to some very significant difficulties that we were having in the border areas. The state of North Dakota is exceptionally generous with their benefits to businesses and the cost of doing business in North Dakota. I know last time when I was here speaking on behalf of the Border Cities legislation with Representative Abrams, I think he was surprised at the level of disparity between North Dakota and Minnesota and really the unequal playing field we had prior to 1993 when this came in. You have a handout that illustrates some of those continuing disparities. Scott Hutchins, Moorhead Community Services Director, is also here to answer any specific questions you may have. While the Border City legislation has helped level these disadvantages, the legislation is still desperately needed. It's really provided us with some stability and the ability to grow our own tax base. For the first time in many years, our commercial industrial tax base is finally growing in the city of Moorhead, and we've been adding jobs and new businesses to the community on a regular basis. Again, on behalf of the city of Moorhead, we certainly appreciate the continued support of the legislature in helping border cities to reduce the competitive disadvantages that exist with North Dakota. And also, as Representative Lanning mentioned, Mayor Cliff Barth from the city of Breckenridge is also here to testify. And I appreciate the opportunity for both of us to appear here today. And I also bring greetings from East Grand Forks.
Thank you, Ms. Shea. Welcome.
Madam Chair and Committee, it is my pleasure to be here to testify for our small community of Breckenridge. The Border City Tax Credits, Enterprise Zone Credits, I can't thank you enough in the past for the use of them. It has brought the level of playing field between Breckenridge and Wahpeton. I moved into Breckenridge in 71, and I saw businesses leaving Breckenridge because of the tax disparities and the things we couldn't do for them that North Dakota could. Since then, we have managed to, by using these enterprise zone credits, hold on to our businesses and increase small business. We're not fortunate enough to get the big ones yet, but we are increasing our small ones. We have created new jobs, approximately 300-400 new jobs. We've retained 1,500 jobs by the use of the enterprise zone credits. And like I said, without them, for example, I built my own business in 1980. Without the enterprise zone credits, I'm not sure if I could have made it or not made it, but it gave me enough relief where my business prospered from that. And that's one example, and I have several of them that we have helped like that. Just by giving them tax credits allowed them to build their business the first year or two and continue growing after that. So it's been just a great incentive to level the playing field between the two communities. And again, I can't say enough for your help, and I certainly hope you support House File 130, because we need that competitive edge to keep our business and retain businesses. And for a community of 3,500 people, it's really important to do that. And even with Moorhead and Dilworth and up and down the border, it is very imperative that we hang on to this border city tax credits. So any support we can get for the city of Breckenridge and the rest of us, I would certainly appreciate.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank
Representative
you.
Lanning, did you want to add further?
No, we'd be happy to take questions. And do we have a quorum yet?
We do have a quorum.
If we have
Representative
quorum,
Lanning.
Chair, I will move House File 130.
Thank you for that motion, Representative Lanning. I do want to just ask Mr. Michael, if I might, just for the committee's benefit, can you just briefly explain the difference between the appropriations piece of this legislation and the tax incentive piece of this legislation, and also tell us, I guess it hadn't occurred to me, Representative Lanning, is this something that we renew regularly, and kind of what's the history as to how this was implemented and why does it keep coming back? It must not be a standing appropriation,
yes,
would be my guess.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It needs to be reauthorized as an appropriation every 2 years, and it has been reauthorized every 2 years starting. It started in 1983 and every 2 years thereafter. And so the Minnesota legislature and governor have, on an ongoing basis, bipartisan basis, have supported this targeted relief.
Thank you. Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, I think Representative Lanning has, sort of correctly explained the way this works. Essentially, these dollar amounts are authorizations to the respective cities that are then allocated on a per capita amount that they use to provide the tax benefits under these two programs to the businesses located in the cities. So it's not like this is a direct spending program per se, but it's a cap tax benefit program. So in order for businesses to get these tax benefits, there has to be an authorization from the legislature of these dollar amounts. And I think initially 1983, it may have been passed for a multi-year period, but since that authorization expired, as Representative Lanning indicated, each 2 years the legislature has essentially reauthorized the amount, and it's been a flat amount. It hasn't, the amount has not grown over time, despite, you know, changes in inflation. The Border City Development Zone program was enacted in the late 90s, I think may have been in like 1998 or something like that, and was intended to provide sort of an additional tool to these cities, primarily to attract new businesses. The other enterprise zones had more of a purpose of retaining their existing businesses, and under this legislation, the cities have the authority to shift those monies between the two programs as they determine appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Questions? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can somebody tell me how a business actually benefits by the monies? I mean, if I'm a grocer or if I'm a barbershop or whatever else you might have that is going to benefit from this, how does that benefit me?
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think perhaps Mr. Scott Hutchins, who's Director of Community and Economic Development and is in contact with all the businesses, would be the best one to answer that question.
Welcome, Mr. Hutchins.
Good morning. Scott Hutchins, Community Service Director for the City of Moorhead. Madam Chair and members, in the case of the City of Moorhead and the process and procedures, and following on Mr. Michael's remarks, applications are made by existing businesses. Those applications go through a process, and actually there's an exchange of information between the Department of Revenue, who signs off as to eligibility on those various applications. And in the case of Moorhead, for the various examples that you give, the city is using its allocation for existing business that participate to reduce workers' compensation costs. And the reason, quite frankly, for that is there's a significant difference in the method and practice of the North Dakota workers' compensation system from that of Minnesota or any other state in the union, for that matter. And the competitive disparities are rather significant. And so we've found it, and I think the business base in the community has found that to be very beneficial.
Thank you.
Thank
Representative
you.
Earhart? No? Representative Marquardt?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and appreciate Representative Lanning bringing this bill forward. And my friend Mayor Barth here from Breckenridge and council member for being here. And I first of all do want to thank the state and members of the tax committee, because as a mayor for 11 years in Dilworth, this program was very, very beneficial to maintaining competitiveness with North Dakota. And as Mr. Michael mentioned, it was mainly in Dilworth for retention that we really used it. And when you had a lot of competing influences that go over onto the North Dakota side. And so it's an excellent program, helps along the border areas, because in North and South Dakota there are some unique taxing. I mean, they have very, very low income tax rates. And what's also important to know is that this is actually just one piece of the puzzle. And when you really look at competitiveness, you know, property taxes overall and for residential is very, very important. And just to kind of illustrate that, the City of Moorhead puts out a Welcome to Moorhead thing where they actually compare Moorhead taxes to Fargo taxes with comparable incomes and market value on homes. And just, I'm going to just use one for an example. And I don't know what year this is, within the last couple of years.
Last year.
Okay, this is last year's. Sorry, I need these now here. But on a $60,000 income, $125,000 home, married family of four, the property taxes in Moorhead would be $1,266, and in Fargo, $2,569. So that's about a $1,300 difference benefit on the Minnesota side. When you get to state income tax, it's about $2,100 for Moorhead, $757 in North Dakota, and that's what, about $1,400. So you notice how the property tax benefit and breaks we can give to businesses, but also residences, helps offset that. And that's why anything we do this year in property tax relief is also so vital. And it it needs to couple with the border cities program to stay competitive. So I just wanted to make that note of how important it is, because does South Dakota even have income taxes? No. They say, yeah. So, you know, when you get down further in some of these areas, it's huge. I know the housing development that's going on in Moorhead and Dilworth and Breckenridge and these cities are very much, would be attributable to the lower property taxes and also keeping businesses in this town. So, again, thank you to the testifiers, and thanks, I guess, for the state in the past and for this committee's looking at this issue. So, thanks.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And to your testifiers, Representative Lanning, I do think the border city legislation has received a lot of scrutiny over the years and has consistently been renewed, and I think it's something that we would want to continue. And I agree with the comments of Representative Marquardt and Representative Lanning, so I think, you know, this is something we'd be hoping we can do in that column. I do want to say that I personally was in the area that we're talking about this summer. I had to drive my daughter to a cabin on Otter Tail Lake, called Representative Simpson. Tried to find him. He didn't answer the phone. And then... So then I called... Then I went on the hunt for Representative Marquardt and Representative Lanning. Couldn't find them either. And I thought, well, I'm going to track these guys down. So I found Dilworth, and I found Representative Marquardt's house, and I found his driveway. I got in his driveway, pounded on the door, and of course, I finally reached him on the cell phone, and he was at his cabin mowing the lawn. But I can tell you from being there, I decided to, you know, go into Moorhead and Fargo and take a look, and absolutely, these communities, it's seamless to someone who's entering the area, and you cannot understand why one city would have this very competitive disadvantage over another. And so I think this is important legislation, and I think if you've been there, you can experience that as a visitor to the area. You're not aware that there's a whole different set of tax preferences going on there. So I appreciate you bringing it forward. Representative Solberg.
Just a comment on South Dakota. They may not have an income tax, but they have a huge property tax. My wife happens to own a quarter of land there, and her nephews farm it. And I think her effective tax rate was about 32% a couple years ago of income for property tax. So it's not always good.
Thank you. With that, members, if there are no other questions, I'm going to lay over House File 130 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And thank you, Representative Lanning, and thank you to your testifiers.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
And I don't have a number for him. And now Representative Kalin has House File 356. Representative Kalin, welcome to the committee. Would a member move Representative Kalin's bill?
So moved.
Representative Solberg moves House File 356 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Welcome, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's an honor to be here in my first bill before your committee. With me today to speak in support of House File 356 is the Mayor of Taylor's Falls, Mike Buchheit, to your right. We call him Mayor Mike. And Chris Eng, the Director of the Chisago County HRA EDA, to your left. And Jenny Lebo, who is the Business and Community Development Director for Chisago County. House File 356, in essence, establishes a border city development zone for the city of Taylor's Falls, which has unique challenges that we'll be speaking to in a second. It will be the first border city development zone on the eastern edge of our state, recognizing that the same advantages that Representative Lanning was just speaking about in terms of the Dakotas, Wisconsin is, as you can see by the letter that's being distributed, Wisconsin is representing the same challenges and competitive advantage to our eastern cities as well. A couple of other quick things before I hand it off to Mayor Mike and to Chris Eng. Chisago County has the lowest commercial industrial property tax base of any county in the state. We are somewhere in the neighborhood of 5%. We're at 6% now, so we're moving in a positive step here. But when we talk about the property tax crunch, we really feel it, and our Main Street businesses feel it, because they're bearing a disproportionate burden as well. But we're not standing still. In fact, two of the first Jobs E program, Jobs E project, was in our district in Wyoming, and we also have a lot of innovative solutions that Mr. Ang is spearheading, doing a fine job for us. And in fact, I will be introducing a bill early next week to look at prairie grass ethanol as a economic development opportunity. So we're not standing still. And the citizens of Taylor's Falls are also not standing still. In fact, just Sunday night, yes, I participated as the as one of the male wait staff for an Oscar gala that's a fundraiser for the Taylor's Falls Park and Rec Board and is partnered with our neighbors across the street, across the river, and literally across the street, St. Croix Falls. So it's a fundraiser every year to step outside of letting our tax rolls bear all the burden. So we're doing all we can, but we need some help. And I'd ask Mayor Mike Buchheit to speak a little bit about the specific situation in Taylor's Falls.
Welcome, Mayor Mike.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. They do call me Mayor Mike. I'm sure I've had a few people call me a few other things. I am the mayor of Taylor's Falls, and I'm actually serving in my third term. And I do appreciate your time. I know you're all very busy, just like myself. The city of Taylor's Falls currently has a population of 1,051 individuals. Our city consists of about three city blocks. We have properties that are set up there as commercial, primarily residential businesses. We are known by census as the eighth poorest city in the state of Minnesota with a population of greater than 500. Now, with our city made up of about three city blocks long, we have 28 commercial properties sitting there. They're mostly retail businesses. And in the last 5 years, we've actually had nine businesses leave our city. Five of them actually moved to Wisconsin. And the reason they went to Wisconsin is because of property taxes. And you can actually walk from Taylor's Falls across the bridge to St. Croix Falls. In fact, if you look at our two cities, even though we work together, there's actually park on both sides of the city, the interstate park. There's actually a trail system that goes from one city to the other city. So our sister city, St. Croix Falls, actually has an advantage over us, and it's property taxes. We have got, of the nine businesses that have left, five of them have actually located in Wisconsin. Four of them have actually gone out of business, stating it's due to property taxes. They're just too high. In 2001, January, we had our largest and oldest building in our city. The old Liberty Mall was built in 1887. It actually caught fire, burned to the ground. Now it sits there. It's commonly called affectionately the hole. It's fenced in, so it's protected. It's actually changed hands property-wise twice, and nobody's built a building there. And every time somebody purchases the property, we get excited and say, great, we're going to finally have a building in this location. And then we find out that the property owner says, well, here's the problem. I could put a building in that location. It would cost me about $1 million to build the building. Now, the property taxes on $1 million building in Taylor's Falls is going to be about $50,000 a year. Well, that sounds good to me. That's a lot of revenue. The problem is, they said, we could actually put that exact same building in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, which is just over the bridge, and the property taxes would be $25,000 a year. Why would we want to build any properties or any commercial buildings in the city of Taylor's Falls when there's that unfair tax advantage? Our last building that actually left, or business that left, it left on December 31st of 2006. Closed their doors. They're located in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. That business is our bank. It was formerly known as the S&C Bank of Taylor's Falls. It's now known as the S&C Bank of St. Croix Falls. And they encourage everybody there to continue banking in St. Croix Falls. It's just a short drive up the hill. And actually, the ride down is free. You could shut your car engine off and coast down the hill. So there's that unfair advantage. So what I'm really looking for is some help from you. I need some partnership here. I need you to level the playing field. I will compete with St. Croix Falls. I'll compete with anybody. We've been investing in our city. We have added some street lights on our Main Street area, which might not be a big thing to a rich city, but to a small city like Taylor's Falls, that was a huge investment. That was $70,000 that we spent on street lights. We're actually paving some streets because our streets are deteriorating, and we know we have to invest in ourselves. We've actually worked very hard to secure a small cities grant so that we're helping our businesses who are located there to say, we want you to be able to compete with St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. We want you to be successful. We want you to be here and stay here. So once again, I know you're very busy. Thank you very much for your time, and I'd like to pass the microphone to Mr. Chris Ng.
Thank you, Mayor Mike. Welcome, Mr. Ng.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I also want to thank you for the opportunity to come down and testify before you today. And I really wish I could come before you and say that the glass is half full, but the truth is that we're experiencing some serious challenges in Chisago County, and we really could use some help. Although Chisago County is one of the fastest-growing counties in the state, the growth is happening primarily on the residential side and not on the commercial industrial side. In fact, as Jeremy alluded to, if you look at our overall market values as a percentage of the overall, only about 6% of our market value is commercial industrial. And so the biggest burden is picked up by our residential taxpayers. Incidentally, the statewide average is closer to 12.5%, so almost double of what Chisago County's tax market values are for commercial industrial. And for cities, Taylor's Falls has a commercial market value of about 7%. Cities statewide for the average is about 16%, so more than double. And as I talked about the challenges we're facing, one of the more serious challenges is that with lack of businesses in our county, most of our residents, as we're a growing county, are commuting outside of the county to work every day. In fact, 2 out of 3 residents that are working residents in the county leave the county every morning to work outside of the areas, mostly in the Twin Cities. And one of our more recent challenges, and it's becoming a very disturbing challenge, is that companies are leaving Chisago County for Wisconsin. As the mayor alluded to, we're losing businesses on a regular basis. And that was mostly referring to commercial. If you also look at the industrial, we've lost 5 industrial manufacturing companies in the past 5 years to Wisconsin. In fact, if you look at the Osceola, Wisconsin Industrial Park, there are 21 businesses in that park. 17 of them are from Minnesota. And so it's hard for us to keep what we've got, but it's also hard for us to attract new businesses in and hopefully help our out commuters find work closer to the area where they're not having to commute every day to the Twin Cities to find work. We are finding, too, that our tax base is extremely lopsided, and it's actually costing us more money because we're growing fast on the residential side and not so much on the commercial side. We found studies that show that for every dollar that a residential taxpayer pays in taxes, in property taxes, they receive about $1.17 in services. For every business, for a dollar they pay in taxes, they receive about 27 cents in businesses. So our tax burden is really getting more lopsided as we go. People will sometimes complain that businesses are receiving subsidies, but the truth is that businesses are subsidizing residential taxpayers, and we just need more of them in Chisago County so we can survive.
Thank you, Mr. Ng.
Thank you.
Was Ms. Lebo wanting to testify, Mr. Representative Kalin, or otherwise we'll go to questions from committee members?
I think, Madam Chair, Ms. Lebo is here in case we need her to answer any questions, and appreciate her making the trip as well.
Thank you.
Before we go to questions, if Mayor Mike could add one little piece that always stuns me when I'm around for the Truth and Taxation hearing. They're extremely fiscally responsible, as I think we're hearing. But their mill rates are pretty phenomenal and coming down. But if you could just share a little bit.
Certainly, Madam Chair, member. When I actually came into office as mayor, our mill rate was over 100. Currently, it is at 0.83. I believe that our competition in the county is somewhere around 0.46, 0.5. So our mill rate in Taylor's Falls, we have absolutely no industrial park. So the load is on the commercial properties and also the residents of Taylor's Falls. So even though we work very hard and we're very pleased about the fact that we brought our mill rate down 5%, when your Truth and Taxation hearing comes up in the month of April and we're facing our residents, they're very quick to remind us that we have the highest mill rate in the county of Chisago County, and second place is a long ways behind us.
Thank you for that. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is probably more informational, and I don't know if Representative Kalin can answer this or whatever. Lots of discussion about property tax relief and that sort of thing. The bill calls for $100,000 worth of state tax relief. And maybe I look for the statute book to see, but is there a mechanism whereby the state dollars can go toward the property tax relief? Or because we're talking property tax relief, but this talks about state tax. The state doesn't levy property taxes. And so I'm wondering how this ties together.
Representative Dammer, I'm going to ask Mr. Michael to talk about that, but we do levy state property taxes on commercial industrial
properties. The statewide business property tax.
Right.
Is that all they're talking about? And that's me. I was trying to look up the statute so I could actually read it, but the book wasn't there.
We'll ask Mr. Michael to take a shot here, but I think what's also being discussed, if I'm understanding the mayor correctly, is the mix within the county or the city as it relates to what particular pieces of property they have, industrial versus commercial versus residential, and just how their particular situation, because they have a very low commercial industrial property tax base, they're probably their net tax capacity is extremely low and therefore very needy on the formulas, I would guess. And then, you know, on the other side, they would get aids in other methods, mechanisms, county aid and LGA. Mm-hmm. But I'll let Mr. Michael try to take a shot at your question, Representative Dammer.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Dammer, the Border City Development Zone Authority allows the city to give three different tax incentives. One, they can provide a partial or full property tax exemption that could be used to equalize the tax with Wisconsin. This was enacted before there was the state general tax was in place. If they were to grant the exemption from the state general tax, it's not clear in my mind whether they would need to use the authorization in this legislation to offset that cost, or if that would just be borne by the state general tax, essentially shifted to other properties. In general, though, what they would use this authorization for is either a sales tax exemption on capital equipment or on construction materials, or an income tax credit that can be up to a 0.5% of wages paid. So that's what the state money would be used for. The property tax exemption would be borne locally.
Representative Dammer.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, then the $100,000 in this particular case would be used for sales tax exemption, for statewide business property tax exemption, and then any local property tax exemption is authorized under the Border City. Great, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, sir, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Chris Ng.
Isn't your county eligible for JobZ?
Ms. Ring.
Madam Chair and member, yes, we are, but what we're looking at here doesn't quite fit the JobZ criteria very well. The primary business focus in Taylor's Falls is commercial businesses, retail businesses, essentially. JobZ fits more with the manufacturing industrial type businesses, and again, in all honesty, that particular program isn't what we're looking for in Taylor's Falls. The dilemma that Taylor's Falls and most of Chisago County has is we don't have a large budget to work with. In terms of cutting the local portion of the taxes, really isn't something that we're ready to tackle. It costs just as much to replace a 1 mile water main in Taylor's Falls as it does in Woodbury. The dilemma is that we just don't have the budget in Taylor's Falls to do that. So we don't have a lot to give up.
Madam Chair, I understand probably the uniqueness of City of Taylor's Falls. But in your testimony, you talked about losing mm-hmm. your commercial, your industrial mm-hmm. plants to Wisconsin. You said like seven had moved, and I thought that the JobZ program was supposed to address that. I mean, there's huge benefits for an industrial company to be able to stay, and you qualify for it. In fact, I think you attracted one, the Polaris or two. But I'm surprised that, quite frankly, you don't have to answer this, a rhetorical statement. I'm surprised that JobZ hasn't solved all the problems for you.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Ng.
Madam Chair, thank you. JobZ has been a very valuable tool for us. I won't downplay that. It's added between the two companies that we've got in the county right now and the one that we're working with that is in Wisconsin. It'll add over 500 jobs to Chisago County, and for us, that is a big deal. I don't want to downplay that at all. I'm absolutely convinced that without JobZ, we would not have Anderson Windows or Polaris Industries in our community. They were both, they both have facilities in Wisconsin. They were both going to build another addition to their Wisconsin facilities. And JobZ was really the only thing at the time we could offer that would level a playing field. And we are using it right now with a company in Wisconsin that is looking at an expansion. and they are talking about bringing 140 jobs to Chisago County from Wisconsin. Again, without Job Z, we wouldn't have the opportunity to talk to them.
Madam Chair, I guess my only question is that when you testified that there were so many that had left your county to Wisconsin, maybe there was a timing issue.
Thank you. Representative De La Forest.
Madam Chair, thank you. I have a question for the Mayor. Mayor, unfortunately, your testimony is not all that unique in being a local elected official who has testified that our C&I tax structure is uncompetitive, and it drives tax base and jobs to other jurisdictions. And I was just curious, when you speak to the businesses that have left for the other side of the river, is that the sole reason they give, is that it's an uncompetitive tax structure here that's driving this out-migration of jobs and tax base? Are there any other factors that they cite, or is this really the primary cause of the problem you describe in your area?
Madam Chair and members, the businesses that are actually leaving Taylor's Falls, what they provide me with is information that says, you know, we can take and rent the same amount of property space in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, for exactly half the price. I'm paying $600 a month right now for rent. I could go over to St. Croix Falls and pay $300 a month. That's the problem that we're running into.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, I just had one more follow-up question for the Mayor, perhaps for staff. In Wisconsin, for example, or perhaps North Dakota, under their state law, do they treat their border jurisdictions differently like we frequently do in Minnesota? For example, in Wisconsin, do they have border zones that get favorable property tax treatment, or is that a statewide policy with respect to property taxes, especially regarding C&I?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative De La Forest, to my knowledge, North Dakota does not have a, Wisconsin does not have a border program. And part of the difference that the witnesses are pointing out results from the different property tax structure in Wisconsin compared with Minnesota. Whereas Wisconsin, I think, I'm not absolutely positive about this, but I think by their constitution is required to have uniform property tax assessment of all types of property. Unlike Minnesota, they don't have authority to have a classified property tax system. So you have the phenomenon that their commercial and industrial property pays a lower, quite a bit lower effective rate than in Minnesota. And their homes, I would likely expect, pay a higher tax than in Minnesota because they don't have a classified structure. And the phenomenon you see going on here is sort of the natural market response to that. There's an incentive, and I think the people from the border along North Dakota testified to this too. There's a natural tendency then for landowners to say, what's the highest and best use of my property in this area? And if you're a Minnesota landowner, it's to sell it for or develop it for residential use because that's property tax preferred. Whereas if you're in Wisconsin, there's a preference to develop it for C&I. So in these border areas, you're going to see this phenomenon where commercial development will tend to migrate to Wisconsin and residential development may tend to be preferred in Minnesota. And these you know, communities are asking for aid to sort of help offset that natural market response to those tax structures.
Thank you. And I want to remind committee members that we're going to hear from Faribault, Burnsville, and North St. Paul still today. So we do want to finish up with this particular bill. There's never enough time, as members know. And we're going to go to Representative Lesh here. But members, I think it was Representative Kalin who passed out this letter from the mayor of or the governor of Wisconsin. It's actually really interesting if you take a look at it. The governor of Wisconsin doesn't reference their single class rate, which is actually a huge benefit to business and a disadvantage to homeowners in Wisconsin. I mean, he doesn't reference that, but he references single sales factor and aggressive regulatory reform and a venture capital bill. I don't know what that is. And then Wisconsin has a $40 million technology zone program. So these are all pieces of information that the governor of Wisconsin, I guess, is using to get businesses in Minnesota to move to Wisconsin. And I just, as to the Department of Revenue, not to come down, but maybe another time you could provide us with any information if Deed or Mr. Moe or with our governor's signature is doing sort of similar letter-writing campaigns in our surrounding states to try to attract them based on whatever. I'd just be interested to know. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, many of us have been to Wisconsin, and, you know, I guess I was always kind of wondering what did it take to make me actually have to locate there. And I guess it's, you know, 50% off industrial and commercial property taxes. And it takes something more than a free toaster to get my business over there, so maybe 50% will do it. So it's good to see this letter. I'm going to keep this posted on my wall to remind me why I live in Minnesota. Now, I heard from Mr. Eng the statements about what you pay in taxes, business taxes, and what you get back, and what the average individuals. And I think you stated individuals get $1.27 for every dollar paid in, or $1.17, and that businesses get 27 cents on the dollar. And when I heard that, I was kind of dumbfounded, because I think about local services, and the heaviest burden of local services is probably law enforcement, for example, or one of the heaviest ones. And it's an area I work in, and I realize when I, as a prosecutor, I see files come across my desk, and I see the number of them that actually benefit businesses, whether it's forged checks or vandalism or shoplifting, theft, those kinds of things. And it's a pretty hefty amount. So I guess what I'm wondering is, how did you get those figures of where did you get them from? How are they substantiated that business actually subsidizes private individuals?
Ms. Frank.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative, those come from the American Farmland Trust brochure that I have up back in my office, and I wish I would have brought it with me. But the truth is that, again, a bus does not stop outside a business, but it will stop outside a home for the school. And as more and more residential development happens, you need more building inspectors, and you need more folks at the county recorder's office and the assessor's office. The business typically will not use as much police protection and fire protection as home perhaps might. Same with medical services and health and human services and other services that are generally provided by both county and city. And so, the number that I gave you for every dollar property taxpayer pays for residential property, the $1.17 in services, is actually what they have found across the nation. But mostly Minnesota, it's substantially different from what a business might pay, and that's about 27 cents in services received for every dollar they pay in taxes.
Representative Lesch, further?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Ring, I guess I would like to see a copy of that, because in terms of how you parse it out and break it down, I'm surprised by the numbers. Well, I'm also very curious because it interests me, and I don't think I've seen too many breakdowns like that.
Okay.
Representative Kalin, if you could have your testifiers to provide that to our committee administrator, we'll get that to all committee members. Representative Kalin.
Absolutely. We'll do that, Madam Chair. Just to point out, Representative Lesch, fantastic comment about how we account for this. I think I would just remind you that our communities are a little bit different, and I'm curious about looking at the breakdown, too, but just that 70% of my workforce commutes to the cities, 25 miles or more. So we're very much a bedroom community, and so a lot of our crime actually is directly related to residential, and then it's you're extending sewer and water out for new development. Just sort of goes to the point of how much Minnesota differs from within 30 or 40 miles.
Thank you. Members, we're going to need to move on. Representative Earhart, did you have a question?
I did, Madam Chair. I heard one of the gentlemen mention a mill rate of 46, I think. I was going to ask Ms. Baker if she has any benchmark mill rates.
Ms. Baker? Representative Earhart's asking you a question.
Yeah.
Fire away again, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if you have any benchmark on mill rates. They were discussing their mill rate in their area. They're at 46, I think. Or you have any range or benchmark of similar?
Can we just take a second here, Representative Earhart, Ms. Baker?
Mill
rates? Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Just stop here for a minute.
Madam Chair.
To understand what mill rates were and what we have now in the property tax system.
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, we don't have mill rates anymore. we have tax capacity rates, and...
And if I may just interrupt, I'm sorry, Ms. Baker, I just want to interrupt. Representative Earhart knows that. I don't want to in any way imply that Representative Earhart does not know that. You will often hear mayors and all kinds of people within the property tax system reference that, and most people know they don't exist anymore. But for the 40% of the committee that's never been on the tax committee, I think it's instructive to understand the mill rate concept and how we now talk about property taxes, because it's generally a confusing point. So if we can take just a moment on explaining mill rates, what we went to. If you want Mr. Hines to do that, that's fine. But I do think it confuses members when they hear the mill rate kind of lexicon.
Yeah, he's got some data with
him. Mr. Hines, can we get a chair for...
he's got data. I think he's got it
on. And Mr. Hines, if you could answer Representative Earhart's question as well, just I think a reference of kind of where this city might be at.
Yes, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Hines from House Research. As the chairman's pointing out, the term mill rate is still sometimes used, but incorrectly. We don't really have mills anymore. We have net tax capacity is the term for the tax base. Net tax capacity tax rate would be a term to use for the tax rate. I just tend to use the term tax rate and stay away from the word mills. That's really the only thing I think I would suggest. I believe the testimony was that the Taylor's Falls total tax rate was about 162. Didn't you use that rate?
0.83.
That was the city. Excuse me. Your city tax rate was 0.83, and the total tax rate, I think you said, was 1. Or maybe I looked that up.
Oh.
I was upstairs listening. Maybe that's what it was. 162 was the total, and the city part was 83.
Okay.
The state average... city tax rate is about 30% to compare to the 83. The average in greater Minnesota cities is about 43.5. So those are some benchmarks you can
use. Thank you for that. Representative Earhart, you're good. Representative Broad. And then we're going to move to the next bill members.
I just have a specific question on those rates. Mr. Hines, do you have a rate for border cities, an average rate for border cities?
Madam Chair, it was a broad, no, I do not. I could work one up, but I don't.
Thank you. Representative Kalin, I'm going to lay over House File 356 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Madam Chair.
And with that, we're going to call down Representative Fritz, House File 454.
Madam Chair, could you suggest which one of these includes the TIF district for the Bloomington Mall? Which one of these four?
No comment. welcome, Representative Fritz. Would someone like to move Representative Fritz's bill for her?
So
Representative Liebling moves House File 454 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am Representative Patty Fritz from Faribault, Minnesota, and I have an amendment to the bill that was put on in the Senate, and I'd like to put that on to get the bill in
Representative Lee order. Moves. I'm not sure we have it. Oh, we're going to hand it out.
They're handing it out.
Do you have a number on it? Representative Leeling moves the A1 amendment.
Thank you. On the amendment, on page 1, line 10, delete the second and. Page 1, line 11, after improvements, insert and parking improvement related expenses.
Representative Fritz, we're going to hang on here a second because we've got some confusion going on now. Okay, well, I think we're receiving Representative Lilly's amendment right now on his bill, and so we're going to we're just going to go ahead and when we get this organized here, we'll come back and Representative Liebling will move it. We have both. It looks like we're Representative Liebling. You're moving Senate language here. It's the SCS 0411A-1 amendment. Is that right, Mr. Michael? That's correct. And, okay, so we've got in front of us Representative Fritz, so you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a bill that would authorize the City of Faribault to spend tax increment money from several pre-1982 tax increment districts on various public infrastructure improvements located outside of the district. This authorizes the City of Faribault to use the increments from the original 1981 tax increment district for a variety of public infrastructure improvements in a defined area in the city's downtown historic Faribault downtown area. And I have with me today our City Administrator Tim Madigan, who will talk about the improvements and what the money would be used for. Mr. Madigan.
Welcome, Mr. Madigan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Tim Madigan, the City Administrator for the City of Faribault. And our proposed legislation, as Representative Fritz noted, is for our downtown area and to address improvements in the downtown. Our downtown is going through a revitalization process that's been in process for a number of years. And it's on the upswing, but there's a need for a number of important improvement projects in the downtown related to street improvements, streetscapes, utilities, as well as parking improvements. And we are looking at a variety of sources of revenue for these improvements that range from special assessments to utility funds, even possibly an urban service district, and also to be able to use the balance of the tax increment dollars that have developed in the original 1981 TIF fund for those projects in a very specific area, which has traditionally been a part of a tax increment district. We currently have in the downtown area a task force that has been studying the need for improvements in downtown Faribault for about 9 months. That task force is about to report out its findings to the City Council as well as the downtown community here in March. So this is a very timely process. We're still in the process of working through the budget items, but I think, as all of you know, capital improvements are expensive, and it's important to diversify the revenue sources for them so we can make them affordable as well as addressing important improvements in our downtown area. The district is due to expire at the end of 2008. We're not asking for an extension of the district, rather to simply use the balance of the dollars that are available within the district for improvements in the downtown area. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Madigan. Other questions? If not, I guess we're going to vote on the motion for the author's amendment here first. All those in favor of the SCS-0411A-1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Madigan, just a quick question. If I understand this correctly, you're looking to take the balance and then use it to do these projects. You could do a special service taxing district, let this decertify, and then use city's resources to achieve the same thing. You want to also add the county portion of the TIF that's been collected and any school portion and then use that? Is that the difference here as to why you're not just looking for a special service taxing district?
Well, Madam Chair, we're looking at a variety of revenue sources. The Downtown Committee is currently looking at the service district as one of the options. But given the extensive nature of the improvements, we don't think that one particular revenue source is going to be sufficient to address all the issues. So there will be downtown special assessments. Our utility funds will be involved. Like I say, the possibility of an urban service district. So we're trying to diversify the revenue base as much as possible because of the variety of needs and the extensive budget when you get into capital improvements that are necessary. So, and we think it fits the spirit of the original district in promoting commercial development in the downtown area.
Thank you, Mr. Madigan. Unless there are questions, I'm going to lay over House File 454 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Fritz.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And with that, members, we're going to hear from Burnsville now with Representative Morgan, and the mayor of Burnsville is with us. And would someone like to move Representative Morgan's bill?
I'll move, Madam Chair.
Representative Atkins moves House File 1050. Welcome to the committee, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. For the record, I'm Will Morgan, Representative Will Morgan from Burnsville and Savage. I'm here to help gain support for House File 1054, which is a tax increment financing bill for redevelopment of a portion of Burnsville along the Minnesota River, the northwestern corner of Burnsville, the Minnesota River quadrant. I have here with me some local leaders who've been working tirelessly on the plans and the vision for the future of Burnsville and redevelopment in Burnsville, so I'm going to defer comments to them. I have Mayor Elizabeth Kautz, Deputy City Manager Tammy Umdahl, and City Manager Craig Ebling, and so I will turn it over to them to present the details of this particular legislation.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. And before we hear from Mayor Kautz, I think some people have a handout with some nice pictures. I don't have it. I'm wondering if I can get it. And thank you. And
hello, man.
Nice pictures. Okay, so we've got it in front of us, Mayor Kautz. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come before you and to speak about this exciting project we have in Burnsville. We've been working on it for a very, very long time. I've been the mayor for 12 years, and it's been on our docket for that long. And this is an area of Burnsville that is heavy industry, and we have a vision for it. Currently, it is a landfill. It is a quarry. It is a storage. It has poor soils, and we hope that you would support us with a TIF so that we can transition this particular 1,700-acre site into a commercial industrial area that will attract medical alliance business and biotech and the like. What we have been working on, we have worked diligently with the property owners, as well as the county and other government agencies. So it has been a long process. We come before you today because we are ready to put tools on the table as we continue the discussion with the market sources who are available and who are interested in this area. And so with that, I would now ask our Deputy City Manager, Tammy Omdahl, and our Chief Financial Officer to also talk about the details of this particular project that we have. And I thank you for the opportunity that we have this morning to talk to you about that. Tammy.
Thank you, Deputy Manager Omdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I have about 5 minutes of material that I'm going to go through before you. I will be brief and hit on the high points. To give you a sense of where the project area is that we are referring to, it's 1,700 acres. It is west of 35W, south of the Minnesota River, bordered by Scott County on the west and Highway 13 on the south. The area, as the mayor mentioned, has been home to heavy industry since the 1950s, and that includes three landfills, one which remains active, a large limestone quarry, stockpiling, outdoor storage, and poor soil conditions. We do not believe that contamination is present, but poor construction soils, and that's one of the reasons for the special legislation that we are requesting. The quarry is approximately 350 acres and produces about 2.5 million tons of aggregate annually. When the quarry reaches the end of its useful life, which is estimated to happen in the next 10 to 15 years, it will become a groundwater-fed lake. The city has plans to treat that water for municipal water purposes. As I mentioned, there are three landfills within the boundaries. One of those landfills, the Freeway Landfill, stopped accepting waste about 20 years ago. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, which is present today, has been working for many years with the landowner to get closure of that landfill to agency standards. We believe that if this legislation is passed, that Burnsville will have the tools necessary to help finally facilitate closure of that landfill. The one remaining active landfill is approximately 300 acres. It's owned by Waste Management. The landfill will remain active given the approved capacity for another 10 to 15 years as well and continue to accept waste during that time. You'll also see in your background that the project area is home to a compost facility, a methane collection facility. There's multiple cement processing facilities as well in that 1,700 acres. The city has worked with the local property owners and business owners for years. The zoning is in place. That rezoning happened in 2002. I think that's important to point out that the city didn't all of a sudden come up with a vision and is trying to push this on the landowners. Those heavy industrial uses will continue. They are permitted interim uses until their useful life and those natural resources or capacity are depleted. And I think that's a very important point as you consider this. With respect to the public infrastructure needs, there's a sheet in your handout showing that it is extensive. These heavy industrial uses have existed with minimal or in some cases no public infrastructure. As these useful lives or these industries come to an end, the public infrastructure that is needed in order to reach the redevelopment potential of the land is estimated at about $160 million in today's dollars. That includes new interchanges, public utilities in the area, as well as including stormwater treatment. Current market value of the developable property, and I say developable property because there are portions including the lake as well as the landfill where waste will remain that will not be developed with buildings, but current market value is $73 million. We estimate, given conceptual plans for the development area, that development or property values could reach $675 million at full build-out after those heavy industrial uses cease to exist. Current TIF law does not support this type of long-term redevelopment where we are talking about the heavy industrial uses continuing to exist while different parcels do begin to move forward with redevelopment. The life of existing interim land uses significantly affect the timing of redevelopment. Redevelopment will need to happen as resources are depleted or capacity is reached, such as at the landfill. Current law under the five-year rule for TIF does not work with a long-term project like this, so we are seeking an extension to the five-year rule under the proposed legislation. In addition, public infrastructure improvements will need to happen over time, and they will cross TIF district boundaries, which is a challenge for us under current state law with respect to TIF. I mentioned soil conditions at the beginning. We do not believe contamination is present, but we do know that there are poor construction soils and that the cost to remediation exceeds existing land values. Passing the special legislation will allow us to begin to address some of the $160 million of public improvements that are needed. And I would point out that we have gone through the exercise of actually looking at how much TIF could be generated given those conceptual plans. And we estimate that to be about $80 million, or about half of the public infrastructure needs, even before a dime would be given to a property owner or developer of the property. And last, as noted in your background, we would like to point out that the Dakota County Board of Commissioners have adopted a resolution in support of this legislation. They believe that this does meet and is an example of the but-for test. They simply do not have the resources to put the public infrastructure in place, of which some of this is county, state, and federal infrastructure. And with that, Madam Chair, we all stand for questions.
Thank you. Mr. Eveling, did you have a comment, or you're here for questions?
No, I'm just here to respond to questions, Madam
Chair. Thank you. Questions from committee members. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is probably a question for Mr. Michael. Have we in past done anything like this on a statewide level? Is this something new, or how will this affect us statewide if we do this project? I can see this being throughout the state, other areas that have similar situations. So just background, I guess. Thank you.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, and members of the committee, there are really three sort of major components of this special legislation. One is the extension of the five-year rule, as the witness testified to, and that has been done in a fair number of instances where cities have come in and made a case that because of the particular situation and the difficulty of doing the development, they needed a longer period of time. I mean, we've heard a variety of reasons for that, from the developer going bankrupt to the, you know, just the difficulties as was expressed here. Second component of this allows a what's called a pooling exemption that allows them to take increment from any of the districts in this area and use it in the whole area that's defined in the bill to do the public infrastructure improvements and so forth. Fewer of those kinds of exemptions have been granted. The city of New Brighton, which has sort of a somewhat similar fact pattern with an area that includes an old, I think maybe not permitted landfill, I think maybe an illegal dump, and railroad tracks and industrial buildings, was granted this type of authority. I think Minneapolis may have gotten a similar kind of thing, but it's been somewhat less common for that sort of authority to spend increment on any activity within the sort of bigger defined area. The third thing that, as the witness again indicated, that they're asking for is expanded authority to create districts based on the fact that the soil here, because I believe it's peat and some other things that requires sort of more site preparation, creates development difficulties. The state's general law in the late 1980s and for a short time in the early 1990s provided that authority to cities. The legislature repealed that in favor of limiting it to sites with hazardous substances in the sometime in the early 90s, like 92 or 93 or something like that. So there was general law authority for that, but the legislature took that away. I don't recall any special laws sort of similar to what Burnsville is proposing here. Some of the concerns that the legislature had at the time was that some of these districts that were qualifying under these old soils rules really didn't have the kinds of developmental difficulties that were envisioned. They were sort of just doing some grading and some other things. In this case, the city probably has a better case, but that's sort of the background.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm guessing the testifiers don't know this, but my first job out of college actually was an intern for the city of Burnsville. And I recall back then even the difficulties that the city had in terms of how fully developed it was at that point, and some of the redevelopment efforts that were going forward in discussions way back then. So I just wanted to congratulate Mayor Couts and the city for your vision, for your leadership on an area that is obviously in need of, and will be getting some improvement. So thank you very much.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Broad. And I would add that the city of Burnsville has tried mightily to deal with this very difficult piece of land. I've been one of the people standing in the way,
admittedly. We're doing it now so that it won't happen.
The amphitheater is gone, so that's a different thing. But my thought on this is, you heard Mr. Michael kind of lay out the three chunks, and that's helpful for the committee. And there are some that are harder than others. And so as long as the city of Burnsville cannot try to be overly prescriptive in a solution, there might be some things this committee can come up with, and I'd ask members to try to participate in that, because this is a very difficult site for those who've seen it. When you have a quarry abutting the Minnesota River and a lot of things going on there with landfills closing, it's complicated. So I appreciate Representative Broad's comment, because the city of Burnsville has tried to find a solution to this problem for a long time, and it is difficult. Representative Wolschlager.
Chair members and Representative Broad, I find myself in the same position. I can't help myself. I've spent half of my life working on remediation issues, and I'm a chemist by training. So looking at this market value going from $73 million to $675 million, and, you know, major plans for a future lake surrounded by old dumps. I'm having a hard time with it because old industrial sites, you know, use TCE for years, for example. And I mean, all of those things of I could go on and on about things that migrate in water. Yeah. It's such a big challenge for me. I can't even get over the science hump right now, let alone the tax. So I can't help myself. I just have to offer that. But
this seems almost insurmountable for me.
And maybe we want to hear from, and we do have to get to Representative Lilly's bill, so maybe we do want to hear, though, briefly, Mr. Ebling, whatever you'd prefer here, if it's Mr. Ebling or if you want to have the pollution control folks who are here address us. I don't know. Mm-hmm. How do you want to proceed, Representative Morgan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'd like City Manager Ebling to take a stab at responding to the concerns expressed by Representative Walshwager.
Thank you. Mr. Ebling, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm old. I probably was there long when Representative Broad was there, and this has been a daunting challenge. The challenges that Representative Walshwager highlights are there. We are extremely pleased that the agency, the Pollution Control Agency, is working very cooperatively with the city and the landowner to achieve closure of that landfill. And what has us very excited is that we believe we'll be able to achieve the best and most environmentally sound closure that would be possible. We would actually, as part of the program that we're working on now, relocate all of the garbage to a totally lined site. And all of that migration issues that the representative is discussing, we believe, will be addressed. We're struggling with the portions of that work that would not fall under the state's normal program, and that would be potentially one of the usages of these freed-up revenues that we would like to use. So the challenges are huge. The environmental gains could be more than that. We're very excited about what we could come up with here, and it does seem to be one of those elusive win-win situations for us.
Thank you. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Obviously, we've got a unique circumstance here with this site. I think we also have sort of multiple but-for tests that need to be applied. What I hear you saying is that but for a change in the law, this redevelopment couldn't occur. But when you look at the three different components here, as Mr. Michael outlined, I think we as legislators need to consider but-for on each of those components. You know, are all three of those components equally critical to meeting a but-for test or not? And maybe you're not prepared to answer that here today, but as we go to final consideration of this, I think we as legislators need to apply a but-for test on all components.
Mr. Ebling.
Madam Chairman and Representative Lanning, as I said, I'm old and I've been around the community a long time, and we routinely struggle with the same dilemmas that you do in meeting the but-for test. And sometimes I bring myself back to some of the basics. I've been in this area since 1983. I've seen all kinds of development leapfrog over this site to sites further south in Burnsville and to Lakeville and Elko and Newmarket. And all I can say is but for this kind of latitude that we would be able to get here, I don't believe that development will occur in this region. At least it hasn't in the 28 years that I've been there. And there just are so many obstacles that we have to overcome here that we're at a loss for how to move this forward. We've struggled with it for decades. So the basic issue for me, at least, is but for some assistance and latitude here, we will continue to languish with the very unattractive and highly intensive uses that we have there.
And if I may, I would suggest that Representative Lanning is one of the members of this committee who has a strong command of TIF policy, and we'll have a lot of influence in looking at all the TIF proposals this year, as will all the members of the committee. But like any piece of tax policy we do, different members get interested in different things. And so there are a handful of legislators who are particularly interested in TIF, and Representative Lanning is one. And I would encourage you to spend more time speaking to Representative Lanning. I think what he may be referencing is the five-year rule is something that, you know, there's movement there, and I think the soils argument is possible. But we have to go back and revisit why the previous legislatures undid the soils districts and what might be unique here. But I think the pooling concept gets real tough, and trying to put the numbers together is something different. So I would encourage you that any particular members who are interested in these pieces of legislation we're hearing, that you try to spend some time with them, because it does get down to a few people who really want to spend time thinking about things that aren't in their districts, and it's hard to get a lot of people to want to do that. So I would encourage you to work with Representative Lanning on that, and any other member who has a particular interest in this bill or any other TIF bill. Representative Lanning, did you want to add to that?
Well, thank you. I would be happy to work with you and pursue the different options here and try to answer the questions about but four. So.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Just one final comment, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for your suggestions. I would look forward to working with Representative Lanning and any others on the committee who have concerns about making this happen. Obviously, the city is relying on some tools to redevelop this land. Burnsville's about 98% built up, if not more. And redevelopment is our major part of our vision for the future. And we need help, and this is one tool that we can use in our community to get that help. Hopefully we have a three-pronged tool, but we'll take as many prongs as this committee will give us. So thank you very much.
Thank you for that. And final comments from Mayor Kautz, if we can, so we can get to North St. Paul. Mayor Kautz.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you and Representative Lanning. We will get the information that you need and the members need to make that decision. And we thank you for your advice and for your counsel. We will take that and we'll bring back the information. And Representative Welsloger, we are doing some really innovative pieces with regard to the environment. We want to be good agents and stewards of our environment, and we have a methane collection system there that converts to power, and power is about 3,500 of our homes in Burnsville. And so we will continue to do the same thing, and we do have the vision to turn that area into a place that would be just an asset to not only Burnsville but to the region. We have been continuously adding value to the region with being a place where garbage comes to and provide resources to the construction industry and other industries. And now we want to be a place where we continue to add value to the state. If you see what kind of income that will come into it, it will bring that kind of income, not just to the city of Burnsville, but to the state. But we will also be good stewards of the environment.
Thank you, Mayor Kautz. Thank you, Representative Morgan, and your testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, I'm going to lay over the House File 1054 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you. And as Representative Lilly is coming down to tell us what North St. Paul is looking at, Representative Earhart moves the minutes of House File. February 21. Representative Earhart, have you studied those?
I will move those.
All in favor of the minutes?
Aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. And one last piece so we can spend our final time with you, Representative Lilly, is members, due to the long session yesterday on the floor, we're going to have quite a day tomorrow. We are going to hear all the bills of yesterday and all the bills of tomorrow, so we are going to be clipping. And so we're going to have to really tighten it up, and we've got a rigorous day tomorrow, so we hope everyone can get here on time so we can not get behind. We're going to double up tomorrow. Representative Lilly, welcome. Is there a member who would like to move House File 1167?
So move.
Representative Marquardt moves 1167 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Lilly, for your patience. And I understand you have an author's amendment as well.
Yes,
and
we do.
Representative Marquardt moves the H1167A1 amendment to get it in the order you would like.
Right.
Welcome, Representative Lilly.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. You brought up yesterday. I'm still a little sore. I was like sitting out there. I'm like, oh, man. What were we, 8 hours in those chairs? Thank you very much. This is House File 1167. It's for the city of North St. Paul, as the chair mentioned. North St. Paul is an older town. was built in 1887, 120 years old, and we're very much in the phase of redevelopment. It's a fully developed city, and so we need a little help. We have some TIFs that exist currently, so we're trying to, instead of setting up some new ones, we're hoping to kind of reach, what do you call it, pool then, reach beyond the borders a little bit. I know I need to, I heard that loud and clear, I need to buy some pizza for Mr. Lanning this morning, I heard. So
There's more than him.
Oh, okay.
No.
We
continue, I apologize.
No, I apologize. This morning, the testifier, I'll get to him in a second, but he was in Senator Bach's meeting, and Senator Bach is very familiar with Village Pizza in our town, and he said as long as Village Pizza was provided for the committee that he would. So you, maybe next time you can make a suggestion. And then the other item is to extend the dates. So today with me I have Scott Dudek. He's with the city of North St. Paul. He's, as I said, we're a smaller city, but Scott has many, many titles. He works with community development. He's the fire chief, and he's also an elected official. He's on the school board. So I was like to pass it over to Scott. He's kind of the brain of brains of the operation. So
thank you. Was that Dudek?
Dudek.
Okay, welcome, Mr. Dudek.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us here and hearing our plea. North St. Paul is a we've talked about it, has been a small community. We're in the midst of redevelopment. Two or three years ago, our city hall was redeveloped and rebuilt, and we put that out to the voters, and our voters approved that, and we rebuilt city hall. It'll be 3 years ago in July of this year. We're hoping that that building sets the pace for our downtown area, and we're really actively marketing and trying to get some redevelopment in our downtown area. We're hoping to have the downtown be self-sustaining on its own tax base and be less reliant on local government aid. And we need this help on our, we only have, I believe there's five TIF districts that we currently have in place. And we've been good stewards of that money in the past, and we're looking for some support in allowing transfer of the funds from these different TIF districts within this downtown development area to pursue and bring in some other development to improve our whole downtown area. And our community is crying for this in the downtown. We are actively pursuing any and all developments in the downtown, and any help you can give us would be greatly supported.
Thank you, Mr. Dudek. Questions for Mr. Dudek or Representative Lilly? Boy, I guess the committee got worn out there. Well, if not, then I'm going to thank you, Mr. Dudek, for coming and waiting patiently, and Representative Lilly as well. And we did we vote on the amendment? Did I miss that?
No.
I'm not certain.
No?
Does anyone remember if we voted on that amendment?
I did not.
We better vote on it anyhow. All those in favor of the amendment to the bill, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. I'm going to lay over House File 1167 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And thank you, Representative Lilly.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, back up to the city of Burnsville here. They've all gone now, but who decides we can grant anything we want TIF-wise, fits the rules, but who decides if this is feasible or not? I mean, I have the chemist here, Walshager. I would think this is an enormous task, and how much money is available? I mean, this is a... I used to dump in that thing when it was open.
Ah.
And now where they want to create a lake that's for drinking water right next door to it, it's polluting the Minnesota River now. I don't know if they were going to move this whole dump or what they're going to do. But who puts that kind of thought into it before we say, oh, we can do that? Is there some, are we supposed to be passing on the feasibility of this, not the economics of it too? Is that going to another committee, or who does this?
Representative Earhart, I can actually answer the part about where the Pollution Control Agency gets involved in this particular project. I can, as far as the, you know, should we proceed on Burnsville or anyone else's, it'll be this committee that makes the decision if any of these TIF provisions would go on the omnibus tax bill. I would also mention that members who are particularly interested in TIF should let me know, and we're going to form a working group that Representative Krinke and Representative Abrams have in the past to sort of look at them all and get into that higher level of detail with Mr. Michael to make the decision as to whether or not we want to do some of these exemptions to the TIF law. I mean, they wouldn't all be here if they didn't need an exception to the law, because they certainly have a lot of TIF available to them now, and so they're all coming in wanting exceptions to the law. But as it relates to who would figure out what Representative Wolfschlager is asking and how all that would work out, I you know, could only opine that possibly the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is the one who's going to be working with them as to closing the landfills and doing the lakes. And I know some of the members sitting around here have done some of this in other parts of the state. I personally haven't been involved in that. I don't know if Mr. Michael wants to take a shot. I think Representative Demmer has some insight to that. Representative Demmer?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if I have insight, but I have a thought. It's something like this, and I understand what Representative Earhart's saying. It makes some sense, but maybe since that's not really in the purview of this committee to determine whether it's chemically, physical, or whether it can be done or not, make a contingent. Make a contingent on whoever does that can basically say that this can be done before it actually, in other words, you can say, do it but for. In other words, if that can be shown by MPCA or by someone that this can be done, that's assuming we want to do it to begin with, Madam Chair. I'm just saying that's assuming that we decide it's good policy and decide to do that, and the only question being, well, if it can be done, it might be fine. Well, we can do a, we could do a contingent on if it can be done, then we would allow this sort of thing. Because the Representative Earhart's right, you know, and I don't know if it's in the purview of this committee to decide whether the cleanup is feasible or not.
And I don't think we have any authority over that. I think that state law, as it relates to permitting any kinds of any projects like this, they can't go forward unless they've received the right kind of permits and done the right kind of environmental review. But we can specifically ask Mayor Kautz and their staff to provide us more information on that. I thank you for bringing that up, Representative Earhart. Anything else? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you. Yeah.